says that Mises was specific in saying that praxeology is value-free, and that is indeed true. And Rothbard also agreed with that, that praxeology itself is not a normative science. It's not a science of what ought to be. It is simply a science of what is. And so it just talks about cause and effect, economic laws, but it doesn't, it's not a science of moral judgments. So it's a value-free science. And for me, this, all science was value-free. Rothbard differed with him in that, and Rothbard thought that you could have a value-laden science of ethics separate from praxeology. Rothbard also thought praxeology was value-free, but he thought that that you could have natural law ethics as a science that the results of which showed what man ought to do. Danny Daly says, my understanding of natural law holds that there are certain truths that are just self-evident. I believe Mises referred to them as axioms. Well, Mises didn't use the term axioms. The action axiom is actually a term introduced by Rothbard. Instead of axioms, Mises talked about the categories, the category of action. He talked about the concept of action. So he didn't use the word axiom, but he and even if he did, he wouldn't have referred to it in terms of natural law. But Mises was a major critic of natural law theory. In his book, Theory and History, he spends a lot of time criticizing natural law, saying that, you know, nature knows no good and evil, that, you know, nature just is, that there's no normative judgments that stem from nature. He wouldn't have applied the term axiom to natural law. Rothbard did believe in natural law, and Rothbard used Rothbard's philosophy is closer to this whole notion of self-evident. And Rothbard was more of an Aristotelian, and Mises was more of a Kantian. Rothbard considered the action, considered human action to be a law of reality that was just evident to the human, whereas Mises considered action to be a law of thought. Rothbard, in his natural law philosophy, he talked about it in his book, The Ethics of Liberty, and he thought that man had a nature, that humans had a nature, and that you could discover man's interest, man's what was, you know, right for the nature of man, conducive to the nature of man, by considering his nature. That is similar to axiom, but he didn't really, I'm not sure if he used the term axiom when he was talking about ethics. Rothbard used axiom when he was talking about economics, although he didn't refer to the action axiom when he was talking about ethics, because he did not treat ethics as a branch of praxeology. I don't think he used the term axiom with regard to ethics. Okay. Zaneta asks, during the discussion of the only new real science, the type of reasoning of the only new real science. So the type of reasoning that that was distinct for economics was different from the reasoning as it was applied to natural philosophy. And it wasn't a new branch of reasoning. I mean, people used deductive logic. They used deductive logic for, you know, geometry and math, and but this was a new approach to discovering laws concerning change in the world, and it was applying deductive reasoning to human action. And even though early economists didn't call it praxeology, they were basically using the praxeological method whenever they were inferring valid economic laws, that basically they were reasoning from what was general about human action to figure out some of the earlier laws that they figured out, like Gresham's law and you know, basics of supply and demand, that they weren't looking and you know, doing experiments or making judgments based on price changes in history, but it was kind of like armchair reasoning to figure out these laws. And that was the basic approach that people like Richard Cantillon and Adam Smith and Turgot and all these early economists took. Now, Daniel Waite says, Danny, this is a bit off topic, but are you familiar with general semantics vis-a-vis Korzybski's science and sanity? I have not read Korzybski, sorry. Leslie said, yes, for Kant, wasn't the proposition that every man is an end in himself a necessary truth? Mises's Kantianism was epistemological, but not related to ethics. That is true. Mises was a huge critic of Kant's ethics. In Mises' Socialism, he criticizes Kant's ethics and as being really backwards. But his epistemology is quite Kantian, and he really uses Kantian language like category and a priori. He did not embrace Kant's categorical imperative idea. Danny says, Danny Daly says, so natural law does not refer to the body of foundational truth, which has no explanation except just that's just the way it is. Sorry, just trying to nail down terms. No, natural law, it isn't about conditions. Natural law isn't about self-evidence. Natural law and self-evidence aren't necessarily the same thing. I mean, some people will say that certain natural laws are self-evident, but there are other things that people say are self-evident. And there are some philosophers who derive natural law conclusions through, long chains of reasoning or observation. So not by just saying that it's self-evident. So those are two different concepts. They're not the same concept. Anthony says, how do you feel praxeology could be applied to the population at large to facilitate unity and teamwork within the human race across government, cultures, religion, and even within these? Well, Mises' idea was that praxeology, especially its most developed sub-branch economics, was hugely important because it showed people how they could prosper. And he believed that most people are primarily concerned with, in terms of policy, that they're primarily concerned with material prosperity. And so that given that, if people came to an understanding about economics and about the utility of property rights, that people would come together and, you know, agree on a liberal, on what Mises called liberalism, classic liberalism, just basically sacrosanct property rights and capitalism, that they would come together in agreeing with that if they only understood, or if they trusted people who understood, the thought leaders who understood. So Mises thought that economics was the most important discipline, because if you could just explain to other intellectuals economics and get them to not completely explain it to the populace, but to just convince them that the intellectuals themselves understand it, that there would be a coming together, because basically public opinion always determines the social order. And so if you could steer public opinion towards liberalism through an understanding of economics, that that you could change the world, that you could make the world a much better place. Any other questions? Danny Daly says, what would the body of, quote, self-evident truths be called? Self-evident truths, I don't think there's a technical term for it. That's a great question. Daniel is asking Danny. We've got three Daniels talking to each other right now. Daniel Waite is asking Danny Daly, how are you defining self-evident truth? So are people here enjoying human action so far? Are you making headway in it? Have you read it before? Daniel Waite says, I love it. Zaneda says, it's excellent. Yeah, it's really an amazing book. It's the greatest book of social sciences, really. Daniel Waite said, I've listened to all of it, all of part one, several times, and started reading it a few months ago slowly. Yeah, the audiobook is really useful. Repeated listening really helps, because then you just remember more of it and you're able to apply it to current events and other writings. Anthony says it's completely new to him, but it's very interesting. Danny Daly says, if you keep asking why, you eventually come down to truth that bear no explanation besides that's the way this world works. Oh, yeah. So Mises has a term. He calls it ultimate. What is it? Oh, what's the term? Ultimate given. That's right. An ultimate given is something that cannot be logically supported. Yeah, cannot be further analyzed. Cannot be further analyzed because you can't analyze it without using the thing itself. So, for example, he refers to the basic categories of logic, just like the way the laws of logic, for example. You can't prove the laws of logic without recourse to the laws of logic. Understand? So they're ultimate givens. And so that's a little bit different from self-evident things, because self-evident, Rothbard refers to self-evident things as something where there's just a shock of recognition of the truth. That you just look at it or you just read it and you know, oh, that's true. Ultimate givens give way as Daniel Waite says, ultimate given gives way as knowledge increases, but there will always be some ultimate given. Yeah, although it's hard to imagine the ultimate given of the laws of logic giving way. You know, it's hard to imagine figuring out some way of logically proving the laws of logic without recourse to the laws of logic. I mean, Mises says that there are certain things that's just the way that our minds work, that anything else just seems absurd to us, and that's all you can say. Leslie says, I wonder what in other cultures would have more appeal, the natural law idea of self-ownership or the utilitarian conclusions of praxeology. Here in Japan, I think an appeal to people's sense of responsibility, they have a term for self-responsibility, in a way could go over better than an appeal to the usefulness of economic policy. We might say that policy won't work here because the Japanese economy and society are different from those of other countries. Well, Mises' theory of society was that all laws and all morals are ultimately utilitarian devices. It's not that they should be utilitarian, or it's not that the best way to judge them is on utilitarian grounds. It's that that's just the way society works. That people are primarily interested in their own survival and their own material welfare and material welfare of those that they love, and that moral judgments that stem from that, and even though there comes a point where it just becomes, where the utilitarian grounding isn't in view, when it just becomes something that you just accept as being, you know, that's just right, you know, that, especially through like peer pressure and just society, you know, saying this is wrong, this is right, you know, religious injunctions and just approbations and reprobation from other people, that you start to internalize it, and people internalize it, and it just becomes like a reflex thing of like that, well, that's just wrong. Even though that it can come to where it's internalized like that, that ultimately where they come from in the first place it is from utilitarian considerations. So even though with certain people, since because they've already internalized a certain ethic, like maybe a certain property ethic, and maybe it's just not consistently applied yet, and then you could just, you know, basically yell at them and just call them thieves and call them murderers and stuff like that, and you know, the guilt them into being more consistent or something like that. You know that can work with certain people who have internalized a certain set of morals, but even people who have internalized a different set of morals, ultimately, if you convince enough people, people in society that, you know, that you're just going to be poor if you follow this route, and you're going to be more likely to die, and if you follow this route, and if you adopt this norm, if you adopt these rules, and you're more likely to prosper, and your children are more likely to prosper if you adopt these other rules, that is going to be the set of norms that gets broadly accepted in that society. Senatus Muddle says, Gödel's first and completeness theorem states that any effectively generated theory capable of expressing elementary arithmetic cannot be both consistent and complete. In particular, for any consistent effectively generated formal theory that proves certain basic arithmetic truths, there is an arithmetical statement that is true but not provable in theory. Okay? Which is an ultimate truth. I think that sounds pretty consistent with what Mises said. Danny Daly said, so back to my original question, praxeology and therefore economics would be based on certain ultimate givens. Well, according to Mises, everything is ultimately based on certain ultimate givens. Because otherwise you're faced with a regressist ad infinitum. Like you said earlier, that, you know, an infinite series of this is true because of this and that is true because of this. You know, it's got to stop somewhere. So we have 19 people left. Any other questions about Mises' approach? Because that's kind of what this introduction is about, is it's just kind of his basic approach. Okay, that's good. Sure, no problem. I did make my part as a separate recording. So if people ask for it, I could post that too. I mean, it was pretty short. I only got to a few slides before David showed up. Okay, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, but bye, Sunita. Daniel asked if I'm going to be at each lecture. Probably, unless something comes up. I'm going to be in California from, when are we leaving California? The 19th? 22nd. It's starting the 22nd for about a week. So I'm going to miss that. Great, Danny Bailey. Glad you enjoyed it. And yeah, the intro is pretty short. So, Leslie, sure, I could do a post discussion thing after Dr. Gordon finishes his Q&A. And after you know, the introduction is pretty short, and so the other chapters probably will have a lot more to elicit questions. Okay, this seems like the question well has run dry. So thanks everybody for showing up. Thanks for attending this first lecture. And yeah, sorry about the delay at the beginning. See you next week. Bye.